Hi, my name is Janelle Engelstad, and welcome to the MAP Radio Hour, a Make Art with Purpose podcast. The MAP Radio Hour includes conversations with creatives, scientists, and other people addressing the intersection of cultural, political, and environmental concerns. You can find out more about MAP and our projects at makeartwithpurpose.net. Special series of podcasts connected to the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall begins with Polish curator, art critic, and literary historian Piotr Rybson. Piotr reflects on the changes in arts, politics, and culture in Poland over the past decades, the influence of the Catholic Church over politics and society, and shares a bit of his own story around these themes. Our conversation took place in the Victoria Lounge Bar in Warsaw. How arts and culture are responding to or addressing any of the what's happening right now in society and politically in Poland. And if you see a shift as the government has become more national, let's say over the last 10, 15 years, how the arts shifted to in supporting that or addressing it?
Well, I think you can see a lot of responses in the arts in the recent 10 years or so, or 8 years. I mean, it depends how you look at it, because the most radical shift in politics in Poland took place in 2015 when the present administration took over, and the party which calls itself Law and Justice, I think, took power. Not only took power, but started something that I would call a Kulturkampf, a very active sequence of actions to both change the elites in the country, in culture, to a certain extent in the academic community, in the academia, and to a large extent in the media. And this is done very systematically, with a lot of resources put into it. So, by nature, of course, the art milieu or the cultural milieu responds to that, because not only it's an issue of politics, ideologies, opinions or attitudes, but it's a matter of professional life, simply. So we see a number of museum directors, which is closest to my recent experience. I was working with the museum sector for the past 8 years or so. A lot of the museum directors are being replaced by new people. You see that in the film industry, where we had a system of film studios that were run by prominent film directors, and they were responsible for production of feature films. They were all closed down to create one big film agency, institute, I don't know how to call it. I don't think it has a proper
precedent.
Form yet, yes. With a new director, of course, on top, which will amass the resources of all those previous separate studios into one body, and obviously it is done to serve some political purposes, and I think the dream of the new administration is to create local Polish Hollywood of sorts, which I think is baloney, but anyway, money badly spent. But that's what's taking place. A lot of the magazines and journals that were publishing literature, especially literary magazines, but also opinion magazines and some scholarly magazines, do not get funding anymore. And the right-wing magazines, and especially right-wing magazines with a Catholic agenda, is getting the funding. Same thing happens with all the NGOs in the country. We were pretty successful in the past 30 years or so to create a whole system of NGO institutions in the country, which were, a number of them very successful in different parts of our social life. That includes, help for children or, cultural affairs, social things, and so forth, medicine. And this is being targeted as well, very, very strongly. There is a special institute, which ironically is called the Institute of Freedom. And it is, the aim of this institute is to distribute central funds, the government funds, to the different NGOs. And of course, there is again a shift towards all sorts of institutions that are connected to either the desired political direction or directly to the Catholic Church. So we see these happening everywhere, also in theater. Theater is very much under a lot of pressure because of its nature, I think, some performance, the word, etc., etc., conveys different positions and opinions in a very direct way. So there is a lot of controversy around modern theater.
And theater was really strong during communism, wasn't that one of the things that Poland was sort of? I remember this old joke I heard when I lived in Slovakia. There was a dog who lived in the Tatras. When he wanted to eat, he went to Czechoslovakia. When he wanted to bark, he went to Poland.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's a good saying. And, the dog is still barking here. But with a lot of pressures, fortunately, in the Polish system, apart from the central government, we have also the local governments, cities and smaller entities, which are also running theaters, and they are also funding museums, local museums, etc., etc. So this sector is still somewhat safe, at least financially. But I think the intention of the administration is also to change that as well. But on the other hand, they also have the agenda, which is a long-term agenda, something new in Polish politics, I would say, which is a major shift that is being calculated for generations probably in the shaping of identities of the society. And that's why the change of the elites is so crucial here, because you need new actors who will command a new text and a new voice. And this is, of course, creating a lot of problems because it's very difficult to create elites overnight. But, with time, the communists were pretty successful with that to a certain extent. They managed to create these new elites. And I think what is most unpleasant, not to say painful, is to see that this communist lesson in the post-communist countries is somehow coming back in the mechanisms of executing power by politicians, that they also rely on something that they know, because that generation was brought up just as myself in the communist system, so they know it quite well. Mm-hmm. They know the mechanics and the structures, etc., etc., and they somehow, I think, model what they do on that. That's one side of it, but the other is, I think, a kind of a belief that this nationalization of different issues, going as far as the environment, I guess, is something that is going to consolidate the society versus imminent threats of the future. think that in the present world, you know, you need to provide people with some sort of identity arguments, because I think the failure in Central and Eastern Europe of what we would call a development and progress in the old terms lies in the fact that capitalism and liberal democracy was not able to provide any goals for communities that were always aspiring to reach somewhere. And I don't know how that different is from France or Germany or elsewhere, but you know, first we had a step on joining the NATO, and then there was joining the European Union and getting some material base, you know, and all those things which were embedded within the Western framework. And that worked fine, you know. People were getting richer, you know, they were getting well off. Even the disadvantaged part of the society, which is quite huge, quite significant, and did not profit to that extent as city people from all these changes. You know, you go into Polish villages and, you know, everybody has new roofs and
right.
You know,
things cable are television happening.
Or cable
whatever.
Television, yeah. And they have the iPhones and whatnot, you
yeah.
know, and cars and
yeah.
everything, yeah. But they don't know now what all this is for, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
So this is what the church supplies in great quantities, mm-hmm. is some sort of, you know, identity issue. And this is something that also the new political forces understood very well. I think mm-hmm. as well in America
yes,
as in
exactly
Poland, you know,
the same
that
thing.
You have this divided society mm-hmm. who is like floating and not really knowing, you know, what to do next. You know, things do not seem to get better. They seem to be getting worse. So hop la on this horse, you know. I mean, you can really ride a couple of courses around the stadium before the party is over, playing on this division. And this is exactly what is happening in Poland now. So these political forces are relying very heavily on the church, very heavily, because the church is providing them the identity matter.
Yeah.
But this identity matter is very outdated. You know, this yeah. is the problem. You know, it's for somebody who's around, and you know, we don't have closed borders, you have Wi-Fi everywhere, you know, people are connected this way or the other to the world. This is probably not something that will last long, and then we'll see if we'll get another crisis, because we reached a point, I think, where a lot of these positive changes have been used as a fuel to do other type of changes, and this fuel was simply burnt. It's not there anymore, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to happen next.
So turning back to arts and culture, if you look at the communist history, there was this strong underground movement, magazines and theater and music even. And it felt like when the build-up to when the wall came down and these subsequent governments were toppling, there was a place that people, arts and culture, the people in that sector were ready. They'd been prepared, and that kind of helped the tide. It helped push that tide that was being driven by many forces. And I wonder if you have a sense of that sort of energy now that's, you know, maybe even not so present, but that it's there.
Yes, I think some of it is there, but on the one hand, when you look at the visual arts, for example, you know, the visual artists, many of them, I think, including or especially maybe the young generation, they just flew with the flow of a hope to become part of a kind of a global art scene and art market. And I think the commercialization of art came very, very strongly into the minds of that generation, even if the art market did not build up to become something, you know, visible, very strong, etc., etc. So, in a sense, I think large part of the scene got a type of a middle-class aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the artists in the 80s or before, they were usually without anything, you know, they were poor people. And they were very radical in their attitudes. And right now an artist is not much different, many of them, from, you know, somebody else who has credits and needs to pay, you know, the credit and so forth and so forth. So a lot of the energy, I think, went in that direction. Some people became successful, you know, they became celebrity artists and they are, you know, on show in the world, etc., etc. But that's a very tiny group. And of course, there is a shift also in the art language. That's another thing, another dimension of it, that it became very verbal. It became quite figurative, and the media discourse, the politicized media discourse, crept very strongly into the arts. So, on the other hand, you know, contrary to what I said, you know, a lot of things are pretty outspoken. You go to a show and you see, you can read things. They are not very ambiguous, they are quite direct, and you feel a sense of attitudes towards what's, you know, what's around, which are opposing, let's say, the flow that is generated by the government and by the authorities. However, you know, we were living in a very simplified world in the 80s.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. It's hard to compare it because you had...
It's horrible. You know, it was us and them.
Yeah, and also you didn't have this international... It was the Cold War. It was black and there was white.
Sure.
And you never knew who was...
Now we are, you know, in the middle of all the complexities of the global world.
This interconnectedness.
A lot of the artists, I think, they are more concerned, and rightly so, about, you know, what's happening with our climate than with what, you know, this peripheric government is doing. Because, you know, on the big issue is that although we have an authoritarian government that tries to be more and more authoritarian, we're dealing with, a small party of peripheral people in a basically peripheral political scene.
Right.
I don't think Poland is so peripheral as a country, but the scene, the politics, is totally peripheral and without much meaning, you know. I mean, I wouldn't really call it politics in a wider sense.
Right.
It's just inner politics.
Mm-hmm.
It's just dealing with the society. They don't have much politics with any country, etc., etc. And I think they hope, they being the government, to get some perks, you know, from President Donald Trump.
Right.
That's basically the great political agenda.
Right.
So how can an artist really, you know, who is conscious of what's going on in the world, address that?
Yeah.
I mean, you can draw a cartoon. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
So I would say the major shift is in the area of things that really matter, which is, you know, the future of the world, climate change, society divide, gender issues.
Yeah. They're global issues.
You know, things that are, you know, that are determining our lives and the lives of our children, if we have children, and so forth and so forth. And that's what's important.
You know? Right.
And those people will be gone, you know. And, and will, of course, you know, suffer from their silly unprofessional deeds, not hoping for much professional deeds of you know, other type of politicians which will appear on the scene, which are just media creations today. These are not statesmen or stateswomen anymore.
They're
just actors on the scene, you know, puppets of some play.
Right, yeah.
What can you do with that? You know, how to end that show?
Yeah.
Who's directing that, you know, performance? That's something that goes beyond the power of governments, so it definitely goes beyond the power of individual artists or creators. You know, they can reflect on that. They can't, I think, have a feeling of individual impression that they can really make on the course of events.
Right.
So, as you said, many movements, yes, very many, but in a very global sense.
So if we turn personal for a minute, one thing we've not ever talked about in the couple times we've met is your own history personally and what you were doing as a young person coming of age in communism and starting to be an actor in arts and culture. I've never really heard your own story, and I'm really interested in how, when communism ended, that impacted you professionally too, personally, but professionally, because when you're working as a curator and you're doing all the things you've done culturally, I mean, definitely your personal and professional life are very enmeshed.
That's true, but you know, I don't know that story very well either, I would say. I never heard it. So
it's your chance.
And it's a long story, you know. It's not that easy to put it in short lines, because I have a very complex background. You know, I was basically coming of age not only in communist Poland, but also in post-colonial Africa. I lived there for 3 years,
okay,
in Ethiopia, which was the last country, I think, which had an emperor. I don't remember any other emperor state. Well, maybe
was that Hollywood?
Iran was an emperor state. I don't know.
Yeah.
That was between 72 and 75. So I saw the fall of Emperor Haile Selassie,
a very important
figure in 20th century history, and the invasion of communist agents, I would say, into the African northeast African masses in Ethiopia, which revolted against a very old system, which was one of the last gasps, I think, of these empires. You know, it was one of the last empires on the earth. It was very interesting, and I was going to school there, so I was basically also made party there. It's a very important part of my life.
Shaping?
Yes, very important.
Yeah.
And I was the only white kid in school, basically. So it was very, very important for me. And then throughout.
So how old were you?
I came back to Poland when I was 19.
Okay, so these are formative years.
Very formative years, and I basically went to university soon after.
Uh-huh.
And I studied something very odd, you know, which I'm not practicing. I never practiced. I studied Mediterranean archaeology, but I was working with a modern art gallery, and I was writing a PhD later on the Baroque literature in Europe. So I had a very complex, I think I was just trying to do everything at the same time, and that was the good side of the communist times, that you had a lot of time. There were resources, natural resources, in the terms of, you know, galleries or museums or libraries, etc., which you could use to educate yourself. And also I was lucky enough to work with contemporary artists, not only Polish, but also from abroad, many of them from America. I was very close to the Fluxus movement. I was working with people such as, you know, Dick Higgins or Alison Knowles, which were very, very important for me when I was in my, you know, early 20s.
And working with them how?
Well, working them in many ways, you know, because with Dick Higgins, for example, we were working on a research non-linear literature, some visual literature and so forth. And
kind of like what Something Else Press
something
was doing?
Something like that, you know, like Concrete Poetry or Something Else Press, and his activity with the kind of non-orthodox publications. But going into the history of that in Europe, or in the, mainly in the Western world, but then later also including India and Japan and Latin America, of course. And then, you know, we had a kind of a circle of scholars in England, Germany, Portugal, Italy, United States, myself in Poland, and like there was also a Ukrainian calling, and we were doing, you know, big research on the histories of visual literature, which then took shape in a series of books and publications that came around the end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s in different countries, which kind of really presented to the academia a totally different literary tradition. And I think it was very important at that time, because this was exactly the moment of this major shift into the visual culture. So I think we were just going on that tide, you know, knowing it or not. And also when computers came into our life, and a lot of the things we were working with from the past, from the Baroque literature, but also earlier, especially in Arabic, Hebrew, and also Indian culture, where you had a kind of a proto-computer type of thinking in literature, you know, in aleatoric thinking and so on and so on. You know, I was not so stuck behind the Iron Curtain, you know, as many of my colleagues probably at that time. Mm-hmm. And our small galleries, you know, there were, you know, we were playing host to a lot of artists. You know,
how did you find out about Dick Higgins, for instance?
I mean, well, I met him through his wife first. We had in 1978, I was working with a gallery in Warsaw, which is a kind of a non-official gallery connected to a students' club. And my friend who was running this gallery initiated the first performance festival in Poland. It was called IM, International Artist Meeting. And I don't know, 50 people came around from Europe and America. From most European countries, I would say, even Czechoslovakia, which was pretty closed off at that time, but, you know, from France and from Italy and Holland, which was always very present in Poland in the art scene. And from the States, a couple of artists came as well, including Alison Knowles, mm-hmm. who was a performance artist and an installation artist, very, very senior artist today, still living in New York. And she was the ex-wife of Dick Higgins, and that's how we connected. Mm-hmm. And I was working with Alison, I was helping her with her performance work, and here, and we maintained contact for decades. You know, yeah. I was visiting them in the States many times. I was, gave lectures at their gallery, which was the Millie Harvey Gallery, mm-hmm. on Broadway in New York. So I started corresponding with them. You know, one of the big problems we had, for example, here is no books. You know, I mean, most of the books were just produced here. There was no market, and published in Great Britain or America in the 80s would probably cost, you know, half of a monthly salary here because of the currency exchange.
Right.
You know, so this was, for example, one of the big issues I was getting a lot of this material from.
Yeah.
From Dick or from my other, you know, friends and colleagues.
And was it difficult to even travel over there? I mean, how did you get...
It was quite difficult to travel, because not only you had to get a permission for the passport, you had to get a passport from the authorities.
Right.
To get a passport, you needed an invitation in writs, I think confirmed by some whatever, you know, notary or by the embassy, I don't remember. But then you needed to get a visa, and that was a second step, which was very difficult. But I managed to travel two or three times or more. I don't remember that in the 80s. I actually did travel a little. Then I got a grant from the American Embassy, from USIA. I think because I had a good relation with the cultural attaché at the US Embassy. I was working with the theater, with the street theater at that time in the 80s. And we invited Allen Ginsberg over.
Uh-huh.
Who came twice, we invited him twice, and he gave very nice performances, and he also went to visit political prisoners, you know, that he knew, one of the translators of his poetry into...
Polish,
yeah.
So, and he got permission to do that.
But, Allen Ginsberg was such a person, you know.
Yeah.
He just went to the Ministry of Interior, you know, and said, I'm Allen Ginsberg, I want to meet the Minister of Interior.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he created a total, you know, panic in the ministry, and he made it, you know, he made it such an impression. I think this translator was released later. So he was a performative person and a performative poet.
Back when you could do that.
When it still mattered,
you know. When it still mattered.
But you needed the Iron Wall for that.
Right.
You know, without the Iron Curtain...
That would created a tension.
You needed the tension.
Yeah,
without
that's
the
what
tension,
we're lacking now.
Play,
we don't,
you know,
have the tension.
We don't have this tension, and you can say anything you want, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Allen Ginsberg or whoever.
This special series of the MAP Radio Hour is produced with support from Trust for Mutual Understanding, Wozniak Center for Contemporary Art in Gdansk, the Fulbright Slovak Commission 25th Anniversary Fund, and Leonardo, the International Society for the Arts, Sciences, and Technology. The MAP Radio Hour is produced by Matthew Horton, and the theme song is by Otto Huditz. I'm Janelle Engelstad. Thanks for listening, and visit the Make Art with Purpose website to connect with us on social media.